May it please the court. My name is Mark Evans, number 40156. I'm a public defender, and I'm here today representing Ms. Carol Valverde. I would like to request 5 minutes of rebuttal time. On the morning of the third day of trial, while the jury was deliberating, defense counsel walked into the courtroom and ensured that her own client, now my client, would be convicted of a class 4 felony rather than a class 6 felony. And my goal this morning is to reiterate to this court that Ms. Valverde had both a rule-based and a constitutional right to be present when that occurred. She had a right to be there once counsel was talking to the district court about the weight element, and she had a right to be there when the interrogatory was presented to the jury. And because she was deprived of that right, and with it, her full ability to defend against the charges against her, reversal of this conviction is required. And when this court evaluates whether a defendant had a right to be present during a court proceeding, it starts with the axiom that the defendant has a right to be there at all stages of the trial. That right is protected by the Sixth Amendment, by the 14th Amendment, and by Criminal Procedure Rule 43. Now, of course, the rule is not absolute, and there's an exception to that rule that applies when there is no relationship between the defendant's presence and the ability to defend against the charges. Our courts have applied that exception in cases where what's happening before the court is purely legal or administrative in nature.
Mr. Evans, have jury instruction conferences been held to be merely legal conferences, and therefore a defendant's right to be present is not absolute?
Jury instruction conferences have been held to be an instance where the defendant is not required to be there. Presentation of an instruction to a jury is an instance where the defendant has the right to be there. And it's also important to note that when you look at the case law about when that right exists and when it doesn't, what our courts have avoided doing is saying in categorical terms, this type of conference or that type of hearing is an instance where the defendant doesn't have to be there. You look at People v. Germany and People v. Key. The court talks about looking at the circumstances of what's actually happening in that hearing to determine whether or not the defendant had the right to be there. We don't just say categorically, you don't get to be there during this particular time. Because when you look at all of the case law cited in my briefs and cited in the Attorney General's brief, the common theme is that if what's going on in the courtroom, regardless of what you label, if what's going on in the courtroom presents an opportunity for the defendant to assist in the defense, then the defendant has a right to be there.
So, Mr. Evans, in your brief, I know you characterize it as a creation and presentation of the special interrogatory. So if we were to look at the creation of the special interrogatory, what is your position? Was that a legal conference, or was that a conference where facts were occurring? How would you characterize that?
It was a conference where there was absolutely an opportunity for the defendant to contribute to her own defense. In fact, what happened to Ms. Valverde here is a prime example of that sort of opportunity. With all due respect to trial counsel, what happened in this case is that Ms. Valverde got thrown under the bus by her own lawyer. And if Ms. Valverde had known that the jury was debating whether she was guilty of a class 6 felony rather than class 4 felony, it wouldn't have required any specialized legal knowledge on her part for her to tap her lawyer on the shoulder and say, hey, isn't this to my advantage?
Counsel, is the problem that she wasn't present at the time that the jury instruction was discussed, or that her counsel had not counseled her or spoken to her in advance regarding what he was planning to do?
Because counsel can't waive a defendant's presence at a stage of trial where they have the right to be there, it doesn't really make any difference to the analysis whether counsel had talked to Ms. Valverde beforehand. And the problem here at heart is that...
Well, it does, doesn't it? If he stands up and says, under your scenario, he would stand up and say whatever, you know, say that the gee, you forgot to include this. At that point, she's going to tap him on the shoulder, but at that time, isn't the cat out of the bag?
Even had somebody else brought this to the court's attention, or had the cat gotten out of the bag, as you say, had Ms. Valverde been there while the district court was evaluating what to do about the situation, even just an expression of displeasure on her part to counsel could have prompted counsel to wake up and object to what was going on here. And counsel, as I tried to point out in the reply brief, I mean, counsel could have made any number of objections to that interrogatory being presented to the jury when it was and how it was. And counsel could have spoken to her right to be present when the interrogatory was presented to the jury. Counsel could have spoken to how that would disrupt the deliberative process. Or counsel could have said, listen, the only appropriate way to do this is to wait until the jury comes back on what it's got and then present the interrogatory. Now, the point of all that is not that I'm arguing that the district court had some obligation to do that on its own. The point is that the time when the court was addressing this issue wasn't some purely legal issue where there's no way that Ms. Valverde could have contributed to her own defense. Had she been there, anyone could have recognized that what was going on was that defense counsel was working in concert with the district court and against the defendant's interests. And Ms. Valverde could have recognized that and taken some action to prompt her counsel to stop doing that. And part of the reasons that I'm trying to drive home this point so hard is that I'm aware that there are Colorado cases out there holding that deprivation of the right to be present is harmless if the defendant hasn't asserted that they would have done something or said something different. And so I want to be perfectly clear here that had Ms. Valverde been there, this could have been different. There are objections that could have been lodged. There are arguments that could have been made. And Ms. Valverde could have ended up being convicted of an F6 rather than an F4. Or she could have ended up being convicted of nothing at all.
Are you contending that the laying aside her lack of presence, which I understand is your principal thrust,
right,
but are you contending that the court erred by submitting the instruction, that the special instruction it submitted?
As is obvious from briefs, the parties didn't object to the way that the court handled this, and I'm not contending that on appeal. I don't feel like that issue is really before the court. The point is that this is an area where Ms. Valverde being there could have made a difference in how the situation was handled, and that's the wrong that I'm trying to address here.
On the presentation, tell me why there's a problem with regard to her not being present for the presentation, which I understand was just handing it to the bailiff who took it into him.
Correct. I know that the Attorney General and I have been referring to this as an interrogatory, but and the reality is that it was the functional equivalent of a jury instruction. What was contained there was one of the elements that was necessary for the jury to apply the law to the facts of this case and reach a verdict here. So this is no different than any of the other jury instructions. And both our Supreme Court and the Tenth Circuit have held that when a jury instruction is being presented to the jury, the defendant has a right to be there. And the deprivation of that right in this case was harmful in part for the same reasons that I've already been talking about. Had Ms. Valverde been there, she could have prompted counsel to object to what was going on, but also because, as the Tenth Circuit talked about in Larson, the defendant's presence in the courtroom when the jury instruction is presented exerts a psychological influence upon the jury. And Ms. Valverde was completely deprived of that influence, which is wrapped into the Sixth Amendment.
How would the jury have present or not?
Because with every other jury instruction that is presented, the jury is called into the courtroom, everybody's sitting at their tables, and they're read to the jury.
That happened here?
No. Well, it did for the rest of the jury instructions.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about when the jury instruction was handed to her.
No, the reconstruction of the record that occurred, I think it was in November of 2010, indicates that the piece of paper was just handed to the bailiff, who took it back to the jury.
So, Mr.
Significant that it wasn't read to the jury?
Yes, because if it was read to the jury would have been brought into the courtroom, all the parties would have been there, and that influence that the 10th Circuit talks about in Larson would have been there, which she has the right to exert under the Sixth Amendment. But because it was just sent back to the jury, that wasn't there. So that was a complete deprivation of her ability to exert that influence on the jury. So yes, it is significant.
Well, I'll just note you have 4 minutes and 52 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I never mess with it. May it please the court, I'm Patricia Van Horn, registration number 30,002, and I represent the people in this matter. The defendant did not have a constitutional right to be present during this portion of the proceedings. It was purely a legal issue brought to the court's attention by defense counsel. There was absolutely nothing the defendant could have contributed to this discussion. Defense counsel on appeal suggests that the defendant could have convinced either defense counsel or the court not to give this instruction, but the court was obligated to give this instruction. And I was thinking about it this morning.
Excuse me, Ms. Mann. Was defendant's counsel obligated to raise the issue?
I think defense counsel had an ethical duty when she realized that an instruction was missing, an instruction that was necessary to alert the court. And this morning I was thinking about, what if she hadn't realized this was missing? What if nobody had realized this was missing until the jury returned the verdict? The result would have been the same. The jury would have received it and probably been sent back in to deliberate and consider that question, because this was a question, it was a special enhancer question that the jury was required to consider. And so I think the jury would have just gone right back in only after determining guilt. So we could have done it then. And so I don't see what difference her presence would have made.
You're assuming that somebody before the judgment was entered would have recognized the omission.
Correct. At some point somebody had recognized the omission somewhere down the line. You could have also, if they had realized it at sentencing, they could have convened a special jury to come in and make that determination, had it been caught somewhere down the line. And I was thinking, well, what if it were never caught until we were on appeal and she had been convicted of the class 4? Could we argue, would there be an argument that this, because this wasn't contested, the amount of the methamphetamine was not contested. The sole defense here was that it didn't belong to her.
Ms. Van Horn, I know that we're talking about possibilities, and right. If one of the possibilities was that nobody caught it, and then Ms. Valverde would only be able to be convicted of a Class 6 felony, I believe that's what Mr. Evans is arguing would be the harm, and that's why defendant's absence could have been thwarted. Either their fairness could have been thwarted by defendant's absence.
But I don't think, had she been there, but somebody did catch it, of course, and it was her own counsel, and had she been there and said, no, I don't want this to happen, the result would have been the same. The instruction would have been given because the court was obliged to properly instruct the jury, which it did. And there are plenty of cases that stand for the propositions in situations like this where you're discussing a pure legal matter. Nobody disagreed about what this interrogatory needed to say. There would have been nothing for her to contribute. And I don't think defense counsel at that juncture would have had an argument, wait, I changed my mind. Even though I notified you, court, that we forgot this and this is just an omission, now I'm saying don't give this instruction.
Counsel, if she had been there, we're talking about a female defendant. Right. If the defendant had been there, she might have said, why are we here, to her lawyer, before they got started, why are we here, what are you going to do? Lawyer would have explained, and then she might have said, is that a good idea? I mean, I'm assuming she wasn't totally familiar with the statutes and all the niceties, but she said, what is the impact of your doing that? How is that going to impact me? I mean, when I was in private practice, clients would ask me questions, and sometimes as a result of those questions, that might change how we might do things. Isn't that all a possibility?
It's a possibility, but this is all speculation, and it was required. It was a required instruction, and that would have been the response. The jury's required to make this determination if they find you guilty. And I don't think counsel could get up and say, no, now we're not going to do this just because, and it was obviously just an oversight that counsel's going to change that argument to the court and say, no, we're not going to give it now, because that's what started me thinking about, well, what if counsel then tried to make that argument? Would the court, would have been error for the court then to submit that instruction to the jury over counsel's objections? And no, it would not have been, because it should have been given in the first place. So that's the only point I want to make. I do not believe her presence was constitutionally required, and then we can look at this under the plain error standard.
Well, how about the presentation to the jury in defendant's absence at that point?
From my understanding, it was just submitted to the jury by the bailiff. And although jury instructions are generally read to the jury while they're out in the courtroom, of course, they're never actually, the written instructions are not submitted to the jury in the defendant's presence. They are taken back to the jury room along with the exhibits or whatever else is they're going to review, and that's not in her presence when we do that. So, and he didn't really make an argument about what difference would it have made had that instruction actually been read to the jury. As far as with the other instructions, that was an error, you know, failing to read that one particular instruction along with the other instructions during that part of the proceedings. If this court has no other questions, I'd ask that the conviction be affirmed. Thank you.
The first thing I'd like to clear up for the court is that the Attorney General has implied that defense counsel should have some sort of ethical obligation to correct this error with the court. Part of the rule of professional conduct 3.3 regarding candor to the tribunal indicates that if the lawyer has made what they later figure out is an affirmative misrepresentation of either the facts or the law, then they would have an obligation to correct that for the court. But when you look at page 4 of the reconstruction that we ordered, creating these jury instructions was a collaborative process. And the burden to prove the elements of the offense, including the difference between an F4 and an F6, lies with the state. It always lies with the state. And it is emphatically not defense counsel's job to hand the prosecutor the rope to hang her client with. The Attorney General also indicated that this was purely a legal issue, that there was nothing the defendant could have contributed here. And that ignores the reality of what really happened here, in that through, call it a lapse, call it what you will, but defense counsel was certainly not looking out for her client's interest in this case. And it's not a foregone conclusion that had counsel been looking out for client's interest, that interrogatory would have been given in the same way that it was. And there's plenty of case law from this court, from the Colorado Supreme Court, indicating that interfering with a deliberating jury is a really big deal. We pay a lot of attention to that. You see that in People v. Germany, one of the cases talked about here, when the court sua sponte gave the Allen instruction. And if nothing else, I mean, counsel could have said, listen, let's let the jury be, let's let them come back on the F6, and then if they say guilty, we'll ask them if there was more than a gram. And it's also not a foregone conclusion that based on the jury's verdict, they absolutely would have found her guilty of the F4 had this not transpired the way it did. There were two parcels of methamphetamine found. One was less than a gram. One was more than a gram. It's not completely beyond question that the jury could have come back with a guilty verdict on one, but not thought the other.
Mr. Evans, was the defense theory based on the weight?
The defense theory wasn't based on the weight, but again, this is all speculation about what the jury would have done had this interrogatory been presented some way different or not been presented at all. And one of the holdings of Germany v. People, or not one of the holdings, one of the language of that case indicates, you know, we can't speculate about the effect of submitting this instruction you know, what effect that had on the jury. And Ms. Valverde had a right to be there. She had a right to give input to her counsel about how this was to be handled. And in the end, this case isn't about me. It wasn't about trial counsel. It was about that client. And it is just fundamental that you have to be there to defend yourself against a charge you get brought by the state. Without being there, none of the other rights matter.
Counsel, what about Ms. comment that somebody would have caught it eventually, and even if it wasn't until sentencing, they could have reconvened a jury? Is that, I know she said is that a, what's your response to that?
My response is that that could have happened. But again, there are objections and arguments that could have been made against submitting that interrogatory to the jury while it was deliberating. Had I been there in the courtroom, I would have said, listen, you're taking the jury and telling it, hey, by the way, once you figure out that you knew she had meth, then go ahead and tell us how much she had, and that it's inappropriate to make that suggestion while the jury's deliberating. Now, maybe it would have been perfectly fair to submit the interrogatory after the jury came back with that initial verdict, but again, that's not what happened here. And it could have, had defense counsel had her client sitting there and thought to herself, you know, maybe I should look out for my client's interest in this case, but the client wasn't there and that didn't happen. Are there any further questions from the court? Respectfully ask this court to reverse the conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, both for your excellent arguments. And the case will stand submitted and an opinion will issue in due course.